Welcome everyone to the Bonus Point Podcast. It's been a long 3 month break between shifts, but the crew is finally back together, ready to break down all the incredible rugby action across the world. My name is TJ Olsen, and joining me as usual is Tevita Halafia, aka rapper David since 86, and coach James Tesserero, who is joining us from Sydney, Australia. So welcome back, boys. James, I just want to jump in and start with you because obviously COVID is still ravaging many areas of Australia right now. How are you dealing with a COVID world? How has it hit grassroots rugby? How has it affected your life personally? All that jazz.
Oh, mate, it's not great. We're in the middle of we're in about week seven of a lockdown. We're actually in week seven of a 4 week lockdown, and they just keep extending it. And I think in a couple of weeks we're supposed to have some of the restrictions rolled back, but the case numbers keep getting worse, so it's not looking good.
Why worse? What are we talking here comparatively to the United States of America?
Mate, we're getting about 250 to 300 new cases in the state. So it's like it's nothing. The numbers don't stack up, but it's cause for panic here in Sydney. So yeah, things are a little bit locked down and restricted. But yeah, doing my best.
Definitely say that. I think you guys are doing a lot better job considering I think our average here in the United States is, I don't know, I think in New York.
Well, it's 1,000 a day in LA.
Yeah, I think it's like 300K across the country. And obviously we have more service area and more bigger population. But yeah, still, I think you guys are.
Stupid people.
And I know we've been spending a lot of time together coaching as we prepare to head to Seattle for the USA Club Rugby Nationals. And what's been the biggest change for you in the rugby world since we last recorded? Hello.
Oh, yeah, I was listening. Sorry, you paused. Can you ask that question again, please?
So what's been the biggest change for you in the rugby world since we last recorded, like 3 months ago?
Oh, dude, you know, I think the biggest thing is just getting used to everyone's personal situation. So coming together as a club, understanding that, you know, certain people want to wear masks. This is where there are. Some people don't want to come training. Some people, first time in my whole life I've ever seen teams and players cover their face to play a game of rugby. And props to them because walking with a mask is hard, let alone playing rugby. So that was actually, I was just astounded. That was crazy. I was like, are you sure you want to do this? So, you know, props to them because that's tough. So, yeah, for me, it's just getting used to that because I've got my own opinions and thoughts. But, you know, it's just great to see even with different personal opinions and beliefs that we can still get together and train and play a couple games of rugby here and there.
It's good. Yeah, I think people are there's two sides of the stories. People are very conscious of COVID and they're trying to be as safe as possible for other people. Some people still to this day think it's a hoax or they just don't really believe in the health system as it is. But we'll leave it there and we'll say that everybody's
doing a rugby show. This isn't NBC, TJ. Stop it.
I know. I'm just trying to portray it. But let's get stuck in. Yeah, Fox News, got to love it. Let's get stuck in and we'll talk about the recent headlines of the rugby world because we've got the Bunnings NPC starting back up. The Farrah Palmer Cup has been going for about 4 weeks. Test match footy is back, so we've got a lot to talk about. But I want to start close to home. Well, close to home for me and Hullo now that James is back in Sydney and talk about the Major League Rugby competition. So that's the LA Giltinis winning their first championship as it's their first year in the competition, being an MLR franchise. A lot of teams who have been considerable favorites in the past and now like the Seawolves, the Legion, they're now in rebuilding stages with pretty average seasons to show as their record. So the Giltinis, they had a really all-star cast. Some of their key players like Adam Ashley Cooper, though, who's just retired because they're getting up in there in age. Now they could potentially lose a couple other players from that all-star cast. So now that LA have made their stamp on the comp after a lot of scrutiny and doubt from the start of their season, do you think that they'll be the clear favorites again next season, or do you think that teams will just come back hungrier and take them down? What do you guys reckon?
No, they're not the favorites next year. And they shouldn't be the favorites next year.
Who would you say the favorites are?
I really like Atlanta, man. I think that they've got like a strong core group. And I think if anything, we saw when they play really well. And we have to look this season for the LA Guillotinis. If anyone I love plays and musicals, it's like Andrew Lloyd Webber's all-star cast for anything that he does. It's like Les Miserables 25th anniversary, right? You bring out all the big guns. That's what the LA Guillotinis did this year. They did a great job of recruiting guys that have the rugby IQ, have the experience to guide a young team, but they're going now. And so it's going to be imperative to see what these young kids learn. I think one thing the Guillotinis have done better than anything else, regardless of the championship, is really build their academy and really blood the new guys coming through. There's so many Southern Californian players that have come through that system and have actually played. So that is definitely one thing that I think they've done better than every other franchise. But as a Guillotinis fan, they rightfully shouldn't be the favorites for next year because a lot is changing in a lot of key positions.
James, what do you reckon?
I agree with everything Tavita said. I think before we decide who the favorites are, we'll need to see how the off-season shakes out and see how they restock in terms of players. But there's a short-term strategy, which is to buy aging internationals, and there's a long-term strategy, which is to put very good young American players into the academy system below them. And so I think it's possible that they will be very, very competitive every year because they can continue to attract high-profile players. Yeah. And then in the meantime, you're kind of playing the long game and building the local young player base, and that kind of sets you up for some long-term success. So to be determined.
Yeah, I see that as a good point. It's because I feel like a lot of their success did come from their amazing, amazing roster. But Adam Fryer and the coaching staff that they assembled, I got to see firsthand, and Huller probably got to see a little bit of that as well, was the big portions of the team's drive, cohesiveness, and mm-hmm. development through those academy players was
definitely
the coaching staff led by Darren Coleman. So that's going to lead to a bounce back question, James, because I've spoken to a lot of the players that have played under Coleman this past season. They've said that he's his favorite coach they've ever had, and that's throughout their whole professional careers because he gets the best out of them. And we've seen him do it in Shoot Shield and now in the MLR. So he heads back home now to coach for your hometown Waratahs, his hometown Waratahs as well, and hopefully replicate that success in Super Rugby. I know this is DC's probably biggest challenge yet to come, but James, do you reckon he can get the job done? And if it's a Super Rugby AU competition, how do you feel like he'd do in this new role?
Mate, there's from the Waratahs fans and the local rugby community, there's a lot of optimism. Winning has followed DC everywhere he's gone, all around Australia, overseas, now the MLR. And he has a good track record of fixer-upper teams where he comes in at a low point, builds them very quickly and turns them around relatively fast. So cautiously optimistic, but I think DC is the perfect coach for the Waratahs at this stage, and he's done a great job with the Guillotinis.
Do you think that he's going to have a lot of success due to the fact that, obviously with the Guillotinis, it was an older side and he was able to get a lot out from that experience, but because it's a younger side and he's able to mold and develop those younger players, because the Waratahs generally do have the youngest team in Super Rugby AU and Super Rugby in general, do you think that his developmental skills are really going to come out in this retrospect?
I think so. I think he comes from a grassroots coaching background. He was the Waratahs skills coach and worked with their academy right at the start of his career about 15 or 20 years ago. So he's coached at the pointy end, but he's also got a fair bit of experience in grassroots. He coached club rugby only 2 years ago. So I think he's probably perfectly situated to kind of develop young guys and then find a strategy that's most suitable.
Hala, when you look at Darren going to the Waratahs and you look at their roster, say presently constructed, who do you think is going to get the most benefit from him stepping in and the most, I wouldn't necessarily say development, but the most that they can get out of that player? Who leaps out at you?
No, honestly, I think, I mean, we discussed, you know, during how many chats that the Waratahs squad is young. And it's reminiscent to when Brad Thorne took over the Queensland Reds. And, you know, it's just that I think it's not that one person or one player is going to be able to shine more or get more out of it. It's that the squad are actually tight. You watch them play. They were definitely playing for each other, the Waratahs. They just didn't have the skill set, both mentally and physically, I honestly believe. And I think DC is one of those coaches, and I've seen it firsthand out here with the Giltinis. He can bring everyone in, and he can have someone like Adam Ashley Cooper in the palm of his hand, and he can have just like a rookie coming into the Giltini squad, like an Adam Channel, doing the same thing. So that's the gift that DC has, is he knows how to communicate to each individual player to bring the best out of them, but he also knows wholeheartedly how to bring a squad together and get the best out of that squad. So I wouldn't say one players or certain players are going to get a lot out of DC. I just think the Waratahs' optimism that James is talking about is fair, because you can see everywhere he's gone, success has followed, and very quickly. So you can't have that's proof that he can speak to a whole squad, and not just your top 25 players. We're talking 40, 50 deep. We're talking, you know, your extended academy. Like, that's what he does, and that's what he's good at, and he's good at identifying pieces to a puzzle and making that puzzle complete.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the one thing that I did notice the first time I met him this past year was that when there was in a team-based scenario, whether it's a guy that he's been working with in the preseason for the past few months, or it's a guy who's brand new to the academy program who's stepping into training, he walks up to every single individual, has a chat to them, talks to them about their aspirations, understands what type of player they are, where they see themselves, and he wants the best out of them. He works with everyone. He's not just looking to work with the stars. So I think that's going to be something that is really going to value, especially with the strong academy system that New South Wales has. He's going to be picking players out from different club teams and other scenarios and going, I want that guy to come play for me so I can mold and develop him. So, yeah, I'm excited for him and really fortunate to learn off him for just even a little bit this past season. So, yeah, good luck to him. But the last thing we'll move on and we'll talk about is the MLR as a whole. Who stood out for you guys? So, Hullo, I'll bounce back to you. What players really stood out for you in the MLR as a whole this season, and who should we be looking out for?
That's a tough question, actually. RJ, Ryan James from the Giltinis. He was the replacement winger, fullbacks, outside center. That dude, man, there's something special about him. Someone that can get onto the field and as an outside back actually make a difference and an impact so quickly. Every game that he played, he came onto the field and the team was infinitely better, whether that was defense or attack. He just seemed to, and it's not, and no offense to him, it's not that he has a high rugby IQ to the extent that those game changers are, like a TJ Perenara coming off the bench for the All Blacks. It's just that what he does is he brings an energy and a commitment to the scenario and just knows how to read the game just enough to really insert his dominance, whether that's coming off the wing to get a short ball off the ruck and making that 15 meters, or like we saw in the semifinal for the Giltinis, that sneaky little blindside drive off the half, and then he goes and scores the match-winning try. His energy for mine coming off the bench – and starting as well, but for me, like, just seeing his growth mentally and his rugby IQ, and I dare say he's going to have a starting spot next year, because that guy is he's something special. And I wouldn't mind seeing him in a sevens format on a either. Like, just really, he's really got sort of that X factor to really just something from nothing. So I'm keeping my eyes on him for sure. Also, found out he was half Samoan. That blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, he's best mates with Pat Madden, a guy that you've coached for a long time, James. So you can probably attest that he's pretty young and he's got a lot of career ahead of him. But who are you looking out for in this MLR season? Who do you think is a standout?
The obvious ones from the Giltinis was probably Billy Meeks and Angus Cottrell. Yeah. But the guy that I couldn't take my eyes off was the quadricep with eyes, John Whitehead. He's got to, mate. He's just impossible to tackle one on one. So he has a bit of gravity for the defense. And anytime you kind of run off Gitz or Ashley Cooper's hips, there's opportunities there. And he's just impossible to get a wrap around because his quads are about 2 meters in diameter. So I enjoyed watching him play thoroughly. Great nickname. The quadriceps.
Oh, man. Oh man, that's the best nickname I've heard in a long time. That's good stuff. Oh, far out. Well, I know, shifting away from the LA Giltinis, I think Bodine Waka from I believe he's from the Free Jacks. I think his transition from sevens to 15s has been something quite outstanding. I think the future is bright for the MLR with fullbacks, because obviously you've got the likes of Mikey Tao and Ben Foden and a few other players that are really incredible. But I think if they get a couple of more pieces to mold around that team, I think they're going to really wreak havoc in the East. But yeah, let's move on. We'll shift topics and we'll talk about a series that is near and dear to our heart, and that's the Bledisloe Cup. So I want Hulla to keep the chat as impartial as possible, please, if that's right. Nice and respectful. But let's chat about it, because I know it's been a long time between drinks out of the cup for the Wallabies, and this isn't a dig. It's the All Blacks have won the Bledisloe the last 18 years in a row. So there's a lot of people that are saying, okay, yep, we've got one hand on the cup. It's pretty much done and dusted. But a lot of people are saying this young and hungry Wallabies team are the team to break the streak under the leadership of Dave Rennie, even after this game one loss. So Ian Foster came out this weekend. He said that he was disappointed with the game the All Blacks played. They weren't playing to their system, especially in the first 30 minutes. Dave Rennie was also disappointed with the loss, as the Wallabies made a few costly mistakes. But first off, I just want to ignore the first sloppy 20 minutes for both teams for a second and talk about when both teams started to put phases together. Who do you guys think had the more effective game plan when they started to put phases together? James, you can jump in first if you want to.
Okay, I can jump in first. Mate, I thought I don't think the All Blacks really ever clicked. I thought they always had enough attacking talent to keep the scoreboard ticking over. But I tend to agree that wasn't the All Blacks kind of getting out of first or second gear. So what I saw was, I saw more purpose out of the Wallabies attack. And I think they constructed their tries and worked hard for them. And I saw a fair bit of purpose towards that. And that gives me a fair bit of optimism. But to counter that, the All Blacks score tries for fun. And if their attack does click and they go multi-phase, they can be very, very hard to keep out and stop from scoring.
Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think seeing the new centre pairing of the Billy and ALB just really goes to show that this connection between 12 and 13, when it happens, we can see guys like individually, like by Sami, I just thought was all over Havili all game. And once he got hit a couple of times, Havili really started to look twice. And that's something we didn't even see during Super Rugby season. So the disconnect, I agree with everything James said. I think Australia really worked for their tries and deserved what they got. I think when Lolo Sio decides to get out of his head and actually play rugby, he's great. But, you know, this is also... I think if this is also the problem with Lolo Sio, is it shouldn't be taking 73 minutes for him to be comfortable doing what he's got to do. But even then, when he did, you saw that those tries came, and he's an integral part of that. So
yeah,
I agree with everything James said. I think the longer the All Blacks start playing these test matches, it could be frightening for Australia, unless Australia can keep up and really... And Lolo Sio is a really big part of this. I really think his confidence needs to grow, and he needs to start using Baisami Nikitau. And the Baisami Nikitau or Baisami... Karevi or Baisami 12-13, you now have core centers that you need to start using. And for the first time ever, I think you've got three centers that can be better than the All Black centers. And Baisami is an integral part of that. So if they start getting some good ball from World of Seal, I think the All Blacks are going to have a bit of trouble. But like James said, if the All Blacks start clicking, it'll be a testament to Australia's mental strength.
Let's stay on that topic. So because the big question mark for the Wallabies was Lolasio at fly half. So except for James O'Connor, who's currently injured, Noah has been the informed fly half for Super Rugby AU. But there's been a lot of chatter as he missed a few crucial kicks on the weekend. His gameplay was quite average in a lot of people's eyes. So you've got to wonder now if Lolasio is the right choice right now for the Wallabies. Not saying not for the future or other reasons, but just right now for this test match. So you've got guys like Tamua who can play fly half, or they can jump around between the centers. You've got an experienced Wade Cooper waiting in the wings. And like Hullah said, you've got guys like Karevi rejoining the squad who have come back from the sevens, which could put more pressure on Rennie to move guys like Tamua to 10 and then put Karevi and Paisami in a combination of 12 and 13. So, James, if I go to you first, who's the right combination right now? Do you feel like it's Lolasio, or do you feel like someone else needs to step up and take that number 10 role?
I think we're trying to find a blend between building for the future and trying to win test matches against the All Blacks at Eden Park. So if I'm trying to win a test match and everyone's available, you probably put O'Connor at 10. But you also need to make sure that you're transitioning to a point where Lolasio is getting reps up a test match at 10. And then you've also got two pretty good 10s below coming out of the Wallabies with Harrison and Donaldson. They're both two of the better young 10s in the country, and they've spent the last 2 years playing behind a badly beaten pack. So I think we have at least two or three very good promising young 10s coming through. That includes Lolasio. But if I'm trying to win a test match this Saturday and O'Connor's available, I'd probably start him.
Hullah, what do you reckon?
I totally agree. That's
it.
I think if you have O'Connor, Karevi, Paisami as a 10, 12, 13, I think that's a very good balance of attack and defence, physicality. That could put a lot of pressure on the All Blacks.
If that's your 10, 12, 13, hands down, Barrett needs to come in for Monga, because I don't think Monga could handle it with Havili and ALB as your 12, 13.
That makes a good point, because especially off that overthrowing the line out, it was Richie that missed that tackle, and he said even in the post match interview he read it, he saw it happening a mile away, and he just couldn't make the tackle. So it could be a possibility that you need to take Richie out, even though people will argue he's the best 10 in the game right now. So it's something where I agree with you guys. If you have that 10, 12, 13 combination, they're a problem for a lot of teams. They're very good. But
I'm also just going to shout out, give Quaid one more shot before he retires and comes to the Giltinis.
I mean, he comes to the Giltinis.
You heard it here,
Well, let's chat about the forwards, because I know they had the Wallabies had their flaws just like the ABs, but I felt like the Wallabies coaching staff, they really did their homework and they were able to rattle the ABs in certain areas. Like you said before, James, they played a pretty good game in integral parts, but the thing that kept them back for me was not capitalizing on the All Blacks' mistakes, especially due to the difficulty at lineouts. So I saw that BPA and Darcy Swain really struggled to find that connection in the first few throws. I don't know if there was miscommunication or it was just some awful weather because it was bucketing down there. Yeah. But the Wallabies were able to make a few adjustments, like that try that they scored, like I was talking about before, the overthrow on the lineout. And now it's a different story. They've switched up their forward pack a little with this week's test match, throwing in Matt Phillip, who's a pretty good lineout player and great in the mauls as well, instead of Lucan. They've also inserted Lachie Swinton into that number six jersey, sending Harry Wilson to the bench. But the All Blacks have kept generally the same pack as last week. So do you guys think that the adjustments will fix the problems for the Wallabies, or that was just a one-off thing and they're just trying to fix the mistakes right now?
I think the set pieces has been kind of patchy. At times the scrum's been very good. At times we're getting penalised on our own scrum. At times, our line-out looks very good, but it tends to fall apart kind of at really critical moments when we really need it to click. So some of it comes down to combinations. Some of it comes down to pressure. Some of it comes down to weather. Hitting a line-out in Eden Park in bad weather with pressure, with Brody Retallick trying to stop you, is a difficult skill. So it's got to be better.
And Brody Retallick just got named as the best number four of all time by an all-star cast on Sky Sports. So I'm pretty sure that goes without saying that when he's pressuring you, it's going to be tough. But Hala, what do you reckon? Because I know you're a big advocate for Harry Wilson, and now that he's moved to the bench, but you said to me a couple of days ago that he had a pretty average or so game, and there was a lot of miscommunication within the lineout. And in just general play as well. What are your thoughts on this new lineup with Phillip and Swinton in there?
Yeah, I actually like it. If anything, it's going to light a little fire. Anytime you go from the starting side to the bench, your ego's hurt a little bit and you want to know why. But I think I rate Harry Wilson so highly that I think he came off that field knowing exactly that's not on, and you're playing for the Wallabies, you're playing for your country, and you need to be able to perform at your best, which he didn't. I think Swinton provides a lot of mongrel, which I think
is going to be
really great. Not only just in the set piece, like namely scrums, but also I just think just getting the All Blacks off their game come ruck in maul time. I really like him defensively in lineouts. I think I think he reads the play really well and what to do. So also I got a crush on him. I think
the hitman is. Well, James, correct me if I'm wrong. Was he in a group of guys that came over to the Central Coast? He was touring around California.
Yep. So this was about 2 and a bit years ago, and there was a bunch of the better young Aussie guys, including Swinton, Jake Gordon, Ned Hannigan, Andrew Kellaway. There was a heap of guys that either got their first test cap or two or have since become Wallabies. So looking back at that group, there's about 4 or 5 Wallabies in the group. Came up through Cal Poly and ran a few sessions.
I could imagine a bunch of the boys that would be taking photos with those guys in a couple of years ago, sitting there and going, oh, I just watched Andrew Kellaway score his first try for the Wallabies and I got to meet him 2 years ago. So that's pretty cool.
And the signed merch that we auctioned for a couple of $100 is now worth a couple of thousand.
that's how it goes. I remember at the auction for the Aussie Sevens jersey, and I was sitting there going, why are you people not bidding more for this? Like, this is gold. Yeah. They won an Olympic gold medal. This was insane. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, $50, let's go. And I was like, oh man,
what a bargain.
Yeah, no, 100%. I was looking at it going, like, if I had money that time and I wasn't spending it on other beverages that night, I probably would have spent my money on the jersey. But I will say I'm very happy to have the Bledisloe back and spark a bit of rivalry, especially between this group. But it wasn't what I expected from both teams, like we spoke about. A lot of mistakes, a lot of frantic play, lots of loose carries. And I think a lot of that could have come from their training preparation and not being able to simulate real game-like intensity. I know both squads played Trans-Tasman just a few weeks ago. Both squads had some test matches under their belt, especially the Wallabies with the French series that was very tight. But sometimes it's hard to simulate international test intensity like this, like the Wallabies against the All Blacks. So what were your guys' thoughts on the sloppy play early on? Was it just blasting the cobwebs out? Was it something where there was a lot of pressure on both sides, good defensive pressure? Was it something that they just need time, or just things didn't click?
Man, I think the All Blacks were trying to be way too physical for no reason. And I think that comes from playing Fiji, who the Fijian forwards were just very in your face.
Hmm.
I just saw the All Blacks trying to... I've never seen it before where the four pack was really trying to be so dominant and violent that they weren't actually playing their position and just being and finessing the ruck If there's one thing that the All Blacks are guilty of, and Richie McCaw did really well, is finessing the situation at the ruck to make sure that it, you know, you're doing something bad, but it doesn't look like you're doing something bad. And that's something that the All Blacks forward packs have been really good at. Really, really good at. Come set pieces too, really good at. And I just didn't see that finesse. So for mind, I think that comes from, you know, when Goliath is running at you with no qualms about his safety, you know, you have to aim up, and that's what they did with Fiji. And I think that subconscious, well, we want to be physical and dominant in defense and attack. And they lost the ball so much in attack coming into tackles too. I was sort of like, what's going on? It was a sloppy game.
Yeah.
For Australia, I just think they just haven't had some rugby. That's why, I'll be honest, this week I honestly think Australia is really big threat. It could end the hoodoo. Because I think Australia coming in, like we discussed earlier, they're working for each other. They're working for their tries. All it takes is for them to start clicking. And for mine, the All Blacks are in a bit of trouble. And it's probably the first real test where at Eden Park, where they're going to have to be careful, because unless the All Blacks really change their mentality, I can't see them. I can't see it being an easy game.
Yeah, it's definitely
with no disrespect to Australia at all, because I just think that it's going to take more than 25 minutes of them just putting on some points and it'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I think if the scoreboard has anything to say about it, it was a very, very close match in the first one, even though there were a lot of mistakes. But if you go by the history books, the All Blacks have struggled to find their groove in first tests against the Wallabies for years, but come back very strong in the second test for the Bledisloe. Plus, there have been some significant changes in the lineups. Like I said, Rico Ioane moving to the center now that he's on the wing. Matt Timur is starting for the Wallabies instead of being that impact player off the bench. Cora Beattie's been able to hold off on the Drunken Knights this week, so he'll be able to be raring to go.
Oh, hold on. We've still got one more night ahead.
we see on Instagram be like, there's been a last minute change. But I think you said it previously, Hulla, is both benches now have some great experience. Nick White and Perenara, both the replacement halfbacks. So it pains me to say this, but I honestly think that the Wallabies might have the bigger edge, but the All Blacks may have the better lineup. So, James, who do you think has the bigger edge heading into this test match?
I think it's a test match at Eden Park in a Bledisloe. And I think any time until we break that hoodoo, you have to say that the All Blacks have the edge. The All Blacks are talented across the park and they're coming off a subpar performance, so they're dangerous. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a much improved All Blacks performance. The Wallabies have shown small bits of improvement every match under Rennie, really, but we started from a low base and the improvement has been small. Wallabies fans are quite positive that we're going in the right direction, but I think if everything clicks for the All Blacks tomorrow night, I think we could be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, so it's the Philadelphia mentality. It's trust the process. It's not trust it now. It's trust it a couple of years.
Yeah, and then they still get rid of Lolasio or Ben Simmons, whatever you mean.
Oh, man. But, yeah, Hala, what are your thoughts? Do you reckon Wallabies have got a chance?
I'll be really honest. This is I as a betting man, I will definitely be putting money on the Wallabies to win this weekend. And that's not a blind faith or anything. There's something that I haven't seen from the Wallabies in a long time, and James said it perfectly, is like they were working for each other. And as much as James and I were texting, and I was definitely saying some not nice things about Lolo Seal, what I saw in that 13 minutes at the end of the game, that's very scary. And if he can implement that, from the get-go, the All Blacks are in trouble. And that's because I don't think Havili and ALB can overcome on form by Sami and Ikitau or Tomoa, or it doesn't matter who you're throwing at them. I think the Wallabies are just in that mindset now.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting because now Rico's in 13. I think ALB's got a few niggles, and you've still got Havilion at 12.
Here's the thing:
now you've got Tamua at 12, and then I think you've got Paisami at 13.
So, and Paisami eats Ioane every day of the week.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to
disagree. None.
Yeah. So
Ioane at 13 is the worst thing that they could have done. I'm more than happy to eat.
What happened to positivity?
I'm just being real, dude. Him on the wing is the best position for him. He's like Doug Howlett, right? Just catch a ball and run. That's all we need you to do. We don't need you to do defensive reads.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah.
Two hands, please.
Oh man, I was still angry about that, but yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. Either it's going to be a blow away and Rico's just going to have a blinder, or he's going to get eaten alive. Because I do agree at Super Rugby level, he's definitely improved in that 13 area, and then he can get away with things like shooting up out of the line and missing a tackle and just making those random reads that he usually does. But I think when it comes to test match stuff, it's going to be interesting. But I do want to chat about the last thing about the test matches, and that's a couple of laws that have been added to this international test matches. This is one that I haven't told you guys about. I was going to chat about, but it came to me, and I want to chat a little bit about it before we finish. So we've got the 50-22, the goal line dropouts. They're both obviously adopted from rugby league, and there's a couple of other laws that have been thrown in. These were used in Super Rugby comps. They're being used in the NPC right now, and now they're being used in test match footy. So from a consumer standpoint, I think it's great because you have less scrums and less wasted time when incorporating the goal line dropout. And you saw on the weekend, if you were watching the NPC, you saw how the back three were defending. You've got a lot of different variations about how to try and defend it, but you've got a lot of talented fly halves or kickers who are really finding space front on because they're going to have to play deep if they're expecting that 22. So it's going to be interesting. I think there have been some comments that there are already too many laws in the game already, and this is just adding more fuel to the fire. But I'll start with you, James. Do you think that these laws are going to be beneficial or harmful to test match footy?
I like the idea of the 20-minute red card. I think we're trying to, at the moment, find the balance between protecting players' heads and not allowing a referee to get too antsy and decide a test match by kind of an overzealous red. So the idea of we're still trying to incentivize players dropping their hiding contact and protecting players' heads, and you're trying to keep the integrity of the match. So I like that. I like the idea of the 50-22 kick. In theory, that should drop a few wingers out of the defensive line and should create more space in the front line.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be positive in terms of attacking rugby. And then I'm still on the fence a little bit about the goal line dropout. I think that might not give the attacking team the incentive that it should. And teams that nearly score might be sent back to halfway to rebuild everything, which is probably not a fair outcome.
Yeah, I agree with you when it comes to the goal line dropout. I'm on the fence about it as well. I'm cheering because I'm not having to watch a million resets of 5-meter scrums and sitting there going, come on, get the frigging game going. But I see what you mean. I'm very 50-50 on that as well. Hullo, what do you reckon about the laws?
I'm with James again. I don't know what's happened during COVID, but we're just starting to agree way too much. It's making me uncomfortable.
Oh man!
So the biggest can I just jump in again, Hullo? Can I just jump in again? The idea with the 5-meter scrum, the referees have got to see a ball grounded to award the try, and a lot of tries we all understand are actually scored but not awarded.
Mm-hmm.
And 5-meter scrum is time consuming to get restarted, but it still gives you really good territory and a really good opportunity. And a lot of times, a likely try that's not awarded is followed by a scrum and an actual try. Yep, and I'm worried that referees are going to start guessing, start awarding tries that they can't see, or guys are going to score tries. The ref can't see it. There's a drop out and we're back at the 50-meter line.
Yeah.
Sorry,
it's yeah. And you feel it. Well, you feel it even as a viewer. Like you sit there and you watch referees. They feel the pressure, especially from a place like Eden Park. If you got thousands of fans screaming at you, and then you've got to send it up to a TMO or something like that, they're going to feel that pressure. And you see some referees, they just crack. They go, I've got to reward it and get the crowd on my side so they're not booing me for frigging 80 minutes.
So I don't get bashed in the car park.
Keen cars and stuff. Well, the last one is the latching. So the latching and being off your feet. When the current law, have you guys seen that one or watched really much about that and seen and any overturns or anything in that regard?
I have not.
Mm. Okay, James.
If you watch the French Wallabies match, a few players did a one-man latch and went to ground with the man and got penalised.
Mm.
And that was new to me. And they've now announced the law changes after they've started applying the law.
Yeah.
So that's another one that we'll have to kind of to be determined. We'll have to sort of have a look.
Yeah. See. Yeah. I think that one probably is going to get the most feedback from coming back to the consumer standpoint, because I think a lot of people, especially if they're not like in tune with the law 100%, they're going to sit there and go, "Why is that a penalty?" And then you'll probably hear a little bit of a conversation between the commentators or the referee will explain it on their microphone. But I think a lot of people are going to get frustrated about that. And I think players as well, they're going to go to instincts or go to things that they're going to do previously in previous right. test matches and then try and go, well, why was I able to do that in the French series but not in this one? So,
right.
yeah, it's going to be something that's really going to be hit and miss for a lot of people. So,
yep.
Yeah, I don't know. But test match footy's back. I'm stoked.
Yeah, baby.
Me and Huller are heading to Seattle, and we're going to watch the game at 12 o'clock the night before we have a competition. It's going to be an interesting one. James, you get to watch it in not the darkness of night. You get to watch it in a reasonable hour. So
we'll still be having beers.
Yeah, 100%. But let's do score predictions. We'll go down the line. We'll go James, Huller, then I'll finish it off. James, score prediction and winner. Who you got?
Mate, I've got the All Blacks, and I've got it at about 45-25. And ooh. I think it might be another one. I think the real dangerous time is before halftime and after halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that may have cost us the match on Saturday. And if we fall asleep and lose concentration on the 10 minutes either side, the All Blacks can put on 4 or 5 tries in the middle 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then that makes the final 20 minutes kind of dead time, and the Wallabies score a few late tries. And so we'll see. I think about 45-25 All Blacks.
Mm. Hello.
Mate, I'm going Wallabies 35-32. I think they sneak home. There's a miracle. I think Lolosio kicks his kicks. I bet you that dude has done about 1,000 kicks this week from all over the paddock.
Yeah,
I think they're going to go for the points a lot more, and I just think the disconnect between that 10, 12, 13 for the All Blacks could pay for it, and I think Tomor and Baisami could, if they connect, could really do some damage. I think the All Blacks are going to be winning for most of the game, and then the last sort of 10 to 12 minutes, I think Wallabies are going to come home. But I think it's going to start from them taking the points really early and, sort of keeping – I think it'll be penalty goals for the Wallabies first up, and then the All Blacks are going to be scoring some tries. And then I just think, that last 12 minutes, the Wallabies bring it home. And I think so if Lolosio plays good, I'm going to go Wallabies keep it home. I don't want that to happen at all. But this is gut feeling, bro, when I was just like, I didn't like what I saw. It made me uncomfortable.
Yeah,
uncomfortable to say this and admit that I think the Wallabies are going to win this week. It makes me disgusted.
So I think it comes all down to weather. I thought if it was going to be similar weather to the weekend that just went, I think the Wallabies were in for a really high chance of taking this out. I think the Wallabies are going to come off to a good start. The All Blacks are going to get under the pump probably about 25, 30 minutes in, and then they're just going to come out in the second half raring to go, just like your traditional Crusaders team that just go, screw this, we're going to beat everyone by 50 points. Mm-hmm. So, and it's a sunny day in Eden Park. It's there's no weather. There's potential for rain on Monday, but I think sunny day, crowd's going to be there cheering for it. It's a second test match, All Blacks.
The Steinies will be everywhere.
90s will be going crazy. Either that, or what's the other one? Spates. They'll be Spates. flying off the shelves. Yeah, I'm thinking it's going to be. Yeah, I'd probably say around the same score line as you, James. Probably a little bit less. I'd probably say 35-25. I think it's going to be pretty tight, but I think the All Blacks are going to have to come back from a deficit. So I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be a comeback victory. But yeah, it's going to be a good match to watch. I'm excited for the NPC
Just as a side note, if the Wallabies don't win, the All Blacks win by 30 points. I just want to also state that.
you have to provide context and clarity. Just
I just felt like I sounded like a sellout just before.
Just in case someone comes on social media and goes, oh, it's hell is frozen over. He's a Wallabies fan now. He's gone.
He's up, mate. It's all about what my gambling looks like. Okay, I need a big win this week.
If you need a big win, I'd go for the exotics, Lockie Swinton, to get a card in the first half. Load up on that.
Oh, you know what? That's a sneaky 50 worth putting down. I like it.
If history has any proof of that, he's done it before.
No respect. That's why I like him. I got a crush on him. I love that mongrel.
I cannot wait to see that kid back in Wallabies jersey. It's going to be great. He's going to be frothing at the mouth because he's going to have that game in the back of his head, and he's going to be going, I'm not going to do that again. And then he'll head right up, and then he'll be like, all right, see you later. Oh, man. All right. Well, sneaky bets on the TAB this weekend. It's going to be a good time to watch some footy. James, you got any plans for this weekend? What are you doing?
Mate, we're in lockdown. So it's a fair bit of cooking for my housemate, watching the footy and coastal walks at Coogee.
Oh, cute.
I mean, that sounds terrible. I would hate to do that. That's, oh, my God.
Right.
Making the most money.
That's, you know, funnily enough, that's the first place that I've been. Everyone is coming up and going, oh, you're from Australia, where are you from? And they were like, oh, have you been to Coogee Beach before? And I was like, why does everybody always bring up that place?
It's famous, dude. It's famous, bro.
Yeah, but all right, FaceTime sessions then with beers during the games, and then we can chuck some bets on the TAB. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Bonus Point Podcast. It's been a long hiatus, but we're back now. We're ready to go. We'll keep the episodes rolling. And stay tuned for more fun facts and good chat from the boys. We will see you same time next week. Enjoy your weeks. Enjoy the footy. We'll see you soon.